Golly, the guy that begs for money on the ramp.
All right, hello everyone. Welcome to the Persuasion Call today. It's September 23rd. Hope everyone's having a good day today. As September is going fast, it's football season, and fall is upon us. So those of you new to the call, welcome, or listening to the replay, welcome again. We are going to go over another kind of a series over the next couple of weeks over probably one of the most critical elements that everyone can work on right now is trust. So the way this is going to work, we're going to spend 10, 15 minutes talking about the concept of trust and then give you a homework for the week, things, something to work on this week, and then open it up for any questions about what we talked about today or even things that you're running into. Now, the brutal numbers are out there. Talk about connectivity and trust, and here they are. When people like you and they trust you, you have about a 90% chance of persuading them. If they don't like you and they don't trust you, you only have a 10% chance. So let's get into the science of this to understand exactly how this works. Okay, let me start off with a fable. I love fables. I put them in all the books. This is a fable about the fox who lost his tail. So what happened is, this fox was running around, and his tail got stuck in a trap. Tail. So here's this fox. He's got this ugly stump. He was ashamed to show himself. It sounds like we got some feedback here. Remember, star 6, if you're on a cell phone and there's wind noise, star 6 will always mute you if you're causing some distraction. Okay, so that's star 6. So here's this fox. He has an ugly stump. He's ashamed to show himself, but there was this big meeting. He decided to go anyway, and he had some time at this meeting, and this is what he says. He says, he gets up there, and he says, look, to all the other foxes, I propose that we all cut off our tails. His tails are inconvenient when the enemies are pursuing us. All those challenges, and it's a useless thing. We don't need it. And then one of the wiser foxes says, well, that's all well and good, but just because you lost your tail doesn't mean we should lose ours. And what this means is pretty simple, is when you're talking to somebody, they're always asking themselves, what's in it for you? Can they really trust you? Why are you giving them advice? Why are you being nice to them? Would you do what you're asking them to do? Because here's the challenge, if you want to know it up front. Just because you're a trustworthy person does not mean people will trust you. I'm not saying that it's fair, but that's important to understand. Trust has dropped 6% in the last 5 years. I've been monitoring it every year. It's dropping and dropping fast. This is the critical thing you have to understand, that in this day and age, people are so skeptical and mistrustful that you have to understand here's the big shift. Because 20 years ago it was, I trust you, give me a reason not to. Now it's, I don't trust you, give me a reason to trust you. Trust, again, is at an all-time low. And here's a Gallup poll. This is what they found out. The majority of people feel that you can't be too careful in dealing with others. Another study found that only 4% of the people that you've talked to in a trust situation, in a persuader situation, only 4% of the people said in the last 2 years did they do business with somebody they completely trusted. So what does this mean to you? Well, we need to learn to develop instant trust. Because you have the best product in the world, the best service in the world, you can be the best expert in the world, but if they don't trust you, it just doesn't matter. Because, just because you're friendly and people feel comfortable around you or they pretend to, doesn't mean that happens. Because here's the big self-perception bias. So I'm monitoring a persuader and a prospect. Okay, they're going back and forth. And they don't know that I'm watching. At the very end, I'll interview them. I'll go up to the persuader, and I'll say, did you develop trust? And almost 9 out of 10 times, the persuader will say, yes, they trusted me. I go, well, that's interesting. I didn't make note of it. Then I go to the prospect, and I say, well, did you trust the persuader? And it was only 1 out of 10 times was there actual trust. So that is a big disconnect for a lot of people. You just have to think, they aren't trusting you, and you need to learn to read body language. Don't take for granted that trust exists. You must work to earn and develop a trust that is instant, genuine, and lasting. So the bottom line is that when we monitor great persuaders, they can establish instant trust. trust this person? Because the research does show deep down people do want to trust you. They do want to believe in you. But it's up to you to make sure that happens. So you don't assume that they automatically trust you. And it's kind of a sliding scale. It kind of goes back and forth during the presentation. It kind of oscillates a little bit. So here's the key. Gaining and keeping trust for the short term and the long term is critical to your success. Now here's the unfair part, many people say, is depending on your occupation or profession, you automatically have an instant perceived trust level. We know that the medical industry has a higher trust level than, say, lawyers, and it goes back and forth. So let me give you some brutal numbers and brutal facts to see where you kind of rank in the world of trust. Because trust is critical, especially, let me give you some scenarios when it's even more important to have trust. The very, very first time you meet somebody, that is critical. Or if there's some type of misunderstanding or misconception about your industry, that would include real estate, foreclosures, network marketing. The audience has never heard of you or your product, or someone hasn't introduced you or recommended you. Maybe they've never heard of you or your company. Or if you make the first contact, you knock on the door, pick up the phone, meet them face-to-face. If you're making the first contact, trust is very low. Or if your company or industry has a poor history, would be another way where the trust starts very, very low. So the interesting thing is the most trusted profession. Anybody want to guess? Anybody know what the most trusted profession is out there?
How about teacher?
Teacher's up in the top tier. Not the top, though. That's a good guess. What else? What would be the top? Most trusted profession out there.
How about a minister?
Ministers are very high, although they've dropped, you know, in the last 10 years.
How about firemen?
There you go. Firemen, and it kind of bounces between firemen and pharmacists. Isn't that odd? You know, firefighters are there to save your life. Pharmacists are there to give you drugs. It must be the drug part or the white coat, or they don't try to upsell you into a different drug. They might get you into a generic brand that's cheaper. But pharmacists come in at about 64%, which is the top of the list, which right there is pretty sad. The top of the list is 64%. That means one-third don't trust the most trustworthy. Clergy's at 59. Medical doctors come at 57. Now, I haven't put the whole list here, but nurses are usually above doctors, which is interesting. College teachers are at 53%, which is an F. Sad one is police is at 49%. Does that mean half the people out there don't trust police? But, you know, the police is kind of a love-hate relationship for everyone, I guess. Bankers are at 30%, journalists at 22%, business executives at 21%. Those are the top of the list. Now, not here to sugarcoat, I'm going to keep going because I probably haven't read where you are. Stockbrokers are at 19. Congress is at 17. Some claim that to be very high. Real estate investors, 16%. That means 84% of people out there you haven't gained trust with. Chiropractors at 15. Lawyers at 14. So if you're in real estate, at least you're above lawyers. Okay. Insurance sales are 11. And advertisers at 10. Network marketers are at 9%. Doesn't matter if it's fair, it's reality. You have to understand a lot of people before you've blown it, but at least if you're network marketing, you're above car sales that come in at 5%. So, what do we do? We're in a low-trust profession. What do we do? What can we do? And over the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be talking about what we call the 5 C's of trust. Each C that you add to your arsenal, to your toolbox, the more trust you're going to gain with people. That's very important that you understand how that works. But let me just go over the 5 C's real fast for you. And then in the upcoming weeks, we're going to spend time on each one of these so you can master those a little bit every week. And it was kind of hard to quantify trust because for most people, it's just a feeling. Like, how much time do you give? Do you give a person before you decide if you trust them? Anybody want to take, what is it for you? Is it hours? Is it minutes? Is it seconds?
Seconds.
Yeah, it is. For most people, it's seconds. So what's happening in that 30 seconds where they decide if they trust you? Part of it's you, the way you're dressed, your mannerisms. Remember, we've talked about subconscious triggers. But here are the 5 C's of trust. We're going to take one of these each week in the upcoming weeks and really lot of facts and features and benefits. They'll just do it because of you. So here are the five C's. The first one is character. That's what most people think of. That's you on the inside. The second one is competence, your knowledge, your intelligence, your ability. The third one is confidence. The fourth one is credibility. And the fifth one is congruence. So character, competence, confidence, credibility, and congruence. So let me give you just an overall example, and then over the upcoming weeks we'll spend time talking about this. So let's say I move into your neighborhood. I need you to recommend a dentist that you trust. So I'm asking all my neighbors, do you trust your dentist? Do you trust your dentist? I'm a bit shocked to find out most don't. But let's say I go to a neighbor and they say, oh, I know a great dentist that has great character, belongs to my church group, is a really good person. But you know what? They're not very competent, though. Last time I was there, they stuck a needle completely through my cheek. All right. Anybody have trust for that dentist? What do you think?
No.
No way. So you go to another neighbor, recommend a dentist. Say, oh, I know a dentist, very competent, graduated top of the class, the best in the state, very, very competent. But you know what? They don't have much character, though. In fact, you'll have to wait a few weeks until they get out of jail for insurance fraud. You see, though, what happens is you only need one filling, and they'll put in two, and they'll be in for three, but they're the best fillings in your mouth you'll ever have. Would you trust that dentist?
Nope.
Not a bit. So then let's say you're at a dentist, and you're there, you get your paper bib on, you're laying there, they've taken x-rays, they come in, they put the x-rays in the light, like you have any idea what's going on. What if the dentist did something like this? They put the x-rays in the light, they're looking at it, and the dentist went like this. I don't know. You know, I'm looking at this little dot right here. I'm thinking you need a root canal, but, you know, I'm not too good at this. What do you think? You think you need a root canal right here? Hello? You would run. You want a dentist that's confident, and we're going to show you how to do that. Fourth one's credibility. What is credibility? Well, imagine you see a sign that says family dentist. So you walk in, and there's a degree on the wall from a country you've never heard of. There is a sign that says cash only, no insurance, no checks, no credit cards. And the dentist comes out in a black leather jacket and an actual tool belt with a real drill and a real hammer. Chances are, I'm betting on it, you're going to run. There's not going to be any trust because there's no credibility. The last one is congruence. Probably one of the most important ones is congruence. People can sense something's not quite right with you, that you're lying. In fact, they did an actual study with dentists with congruence. And here it is. This is fascinating. They put an ad in the paper, says, we will pay you money to endure a painful dental procedure. I think the most shocking thing about this study is that people showed up. Okay? They showed up to get paid for a painful dental procedure. I don't get it, but they want some money. So they put everyone in a chair, about 20 patients in different chairs, and they bring the dentist in and they said, okay, here's the study. We will be using a placebo. Tell them that it's a painkiller. It's not really a painkiller. Just tell them it's a painkiller. Do everything that you normally do. Go through your whole process, and we want to gauge their pain. So the dentist came in, administered the placebo, did everything that they thought they normally did, and these patients were screaming, feeling a lot of pain. So those patients went home. They brought in a new set of patients. They brought the dentist into this room again. Okay, this time part of the study, we're going to administer a real painkiller instead of a placebo. Again, do everything that you did before, everything exactly the same. So what the dentist did not know was that it was a painkiller. It was a placebo again. It was an actual placebo again. But here's the fascinating thing, that most of the people in that study did not feel pain. Because we pick up on little things that the dentist do. The dentist didn't even know they're doing it, but the dentist thought it was real, and it came across as being real, and it worked like it was real. That's the power of congruence. So here's the key. We'll open up some questions. Some of the things that you're doing right now that's harmful to trust is being unreliable. That's a big complaint. If you say you're going to send an email or send information or call at a certain time or a certain day, do it. That really hurts the trust. Another big complaint with persuaders, I don't know what a persuader is, a persuader is over-promising and under-delivering. Now, we know it's supposed to be the opposite. Another thing, too, we'll be talking about over the upcoming weeks is covering up failures or your weaknesses, pretending that everything is too good to be true almost. When you blame others, when you shift responsibility, that's a big thing that hurts your trust. When you come across as indifferent or apathetic, will hurt your trust. If you never apologize, if you embellish or lie or deceive or enhance your position to make your point, pretty much just embellishing, which we all tend to do a little bit, be very careful there. Another one is being very emotional or being very unpredictable really sucks the life out of people's ability to trust you. It can be instant. Trust can be instant. I'm telling you, this is very, very important. So here's our game plan. Over the next 5 weeks, we'll be taking each one of those seeds of trust and dig deep and understand it. And so every week you understand a new tool and how it works. And by the end of this series, you'll have an incredible tool. Give them the trump card, trust. When people trust you, they forgive weaknesses. When people trust you, they like you more. When people trust you, they are easier to persuade. So here's your homework before we open up to any questions. This is a big one I notice as I monitor persuaders, and this is what I've mentioned. Blaming others. When you do not take ownership for a mistake, when you blame others for the situation, even if it's true, it hurts the perception of trust. Part of this is demeaning the competition, telling people they won't want like somebody else's product or service. You need to be very, very careful there. So this week, I want you to be aware that when you talk to people, whether it be a client, customer, prospect, or not, even if it's just a person, don't blame others. Now, your knee-jerk reaction is, well, I don't do that, but you'd be surprised. Because the human brain needs to be right. We don't want to take ownership. Don't do it. So this week, just be aware that we don't blame. We're taking ownership, and we're not demeaning the competition. And you watch how people react to that. And that'll be a big aspect in developing your trust, because that's one of the big complaints, whether you realize you're doing it or not, most people do. So blaming others, or again, making fun of the competition, demeaning the competition, even making fun of another person, kind of hurts your trust, because people always wonder, well, what do they say about me when I'm not around? So that is kind of an introduction of trust. And over the next 5 weeks, we're going over each C of trust. You can add them and implement them to your persuasion and influence toolbox. All right. With that being said, are there any questions about anything we talked about today or any type of things that you're running into? Go ahead.
I was just wondering how you can rebuild trusting other people when you've been hurt yourself.
Oh, for you? Personally?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a tough one for a lot of people because we tend to hold on to grudges. We tend to hold on to resentment. The big challenge with that there is it's us, and we know it's us. And a lot of times it comes from the emotion resentment. Now, resentment comes from the word sentir, which means to feel. So when you have resentment with somebody, you're re-feeling, you're rehashing the moment they hurt you, the moment you lost that trust. So the first thing is to realize that you're doing that and to forgive them and to give them another chance. That is the thing, and to let them know that you are given another chance, they've lost your trust, that you are going to open the door again for them to build that trust, that it will take time. And sometimes understanding resentment, giving them an open dialogue, let them know what's happening, that they've lost the trust, and let them know that you're going to let them rebuild it goes a long way. But we've got to let go of that resentment or that anger because we were probably hurt, that realize, okay, we're going to forgive them. And one of the things that's helped me, I don't even remember who told me this, but what was it? It was, don't condemn others for having different weaknesses than you do. Okay? Meaning, we all have different weaknesses, we all make mistakes, we all need to be a little more forgiving, and if we can just open that up and realize that we've probably made the same mistake, that it's easier to develop that trust back. Good, very good question, very good question.
Thank you.
Any other questions out there?
Kurt, I have one.
Yeah, go ahead.
You talked about great persuaders having the ability to get instant trust from people they're talking to. I would imagine that in each of the next few weeks when you're talking about the five C's of trust, you're going to give us some examples of how we can instantly get that trust?
Absolutely. And the biggest one there out of the all five C's, well, we give you the congruence, you know, your gestures matching what you're saying. That's where a lot of people blow it. And then credibility. How do you develop instant credibility when you don't have any? So we're going to talk about how to do that, how to borrow credibility, and a few things to help you out there. But the big two for the instant part, because there's the long-term aspect too, obviously, because competence is going to be more of a long-term thing, the congruence part and the credibility part, and we'll definitely hit on those, you bet.
Because it's amazing to me that people that are good at it don't necessarily, you know, they're just automatically good at it. They didn't necessarily take this class.
Absolutely. And some people are, when you look at the, you know, the 100 different tools of persuasion, some you do naturally, right? You don't even have to think about it, and some you have to learn. And that's my challenge, is I monitor a great persuader. To them, they're doing it. They don't get it. And that's a big challenge in, say, network marketing or even real estate. Let's say network marketing. The person that's very successful says, well, here's the script. I just call people and read this, right? And they give it to somebody. What's that person say?
Sounds like they're reading it.
Yeah, it sounds like they're reading it. And this doesn't work for me. Are you kidding me? Because they don't naturally know some of the things they're doing and how they connect with people. So we do. We all have things we naturally do, and there's a few more tools that we can add. And that's true. A lot of them don't even know what they're doing. And that's the fun part. What I get to do, I get to kind of quantify, okay, what is that that's connecting them or building that trust with other people and put it on paper? Because to great persuaders, it's just part of who they are. They don't have to think about it anymore.
Right.
And that's
Thank
the
you.
Goal for us, too. Yeah, that's the goal for us, too, is, you know, once you start learning it, applying it, using it, then it becomes part of you. Good. Any other questions? Got emailed me a question. Here's the question is, I mentioned that you should demean the competition. And the question is, well, if you know the competition is going to take advantage of them, how do you warn them without coming across as demeaning or blaming somebody? Good question. Here it is. If you make fun of a company, you say, oh, don't do business with them, they're not very good, they probably won't do business with you or them. It's just human nature. You're shopping for mattresses, and they say, oh, don't go there, they're bad, they're cheap, they're no good, you probably won't buy that mattress from either place. Here's what you want to do. Let's take real estate, for example. If you know they're talking to someone that's dishonest and maybe immoral, that will take advantage of them, what you want to do is provide a way for them to find out for themselves. Maybe it's, you know, tell them they should always call references or to check an organization that keeps track of those things, or to go to a website, or to call a certain person and ask them how they thought it was. So you're not caught in that loop, but you've provided a way for them to find out for themselves that this person's dishonest or not a good person to do business with. Good question. Any other questions out there? Got one more here about, it says, Kurt, you mentioned up, don't ever cover up a weakness. How do you do that without losing all credibility? Well, we'll talk about that with credibility, but the main thing to understand is you're not going to reveal a weakness that you don't know what you're doing or your product or service doesn't work. But actually, we're finding out when you can reveal a weakness in an honest and sincere way, and we're going to teach you how to turn that into a strength, it actually increases your trust. Because people are looking for something that's wrong with you or your product or service. And if you don't give them something, they're going to assign one to you anyway, so you might as well give them one. And when we talk about credibility, we're going to tell you exactly how to do that. The main thing this week is just be aware of the blaming, be aware of taking ownership, because if it's never your fault, there's never going to be much trust either. Good questions. All right, any other questions out there?
Kurt, I have one more.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just received my material in the mail, the MPs, or the tapes and all that. is the completion of all that stuff something that I'll be coordinating with my mentor?
It is. They'll go through different things, recommend a few things. I also recommended kind of an order there on the sheet to go through.
Yes, I got that.
That would be a good order to get started with. So I'd go ahead and start with that order, and then as the different lessons come up, they're going to recommend a specific CD or an audio that you can listen to kind of reinforce that lesson.
So it's more of a take it on my own schedule and just work with the mentor on questions and so forth.
Yeah, but they're going to, it's both, because you're doing your own schedule, because I'm very high content we start going through, so a lot of information, so I'd recommend doing your own schedule, but the week you talk to your mentor, you might say, okay, we're going to focus on the log connectivity, why don't you go ahead and listen to that CD2 again this week? And so you're getting hit from both sides, so I'd recommend both. We'll recommend some audios on some different things, and then, you know, might as well throw them in on your computer or your iPod or something and listen to them all the way through.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Kurt,
all right, any other
questions? I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Do you have time for another question?
You bet.
I was wondering if you could tell us why keeping a journal is important and what guidelines you have for doing a journal.
Well, it has to be read, and you have to do it in a 9-point Tacoma font. Kidding. Well, the guidelines are this, as far as your journal. I mean, journaling is important, especially if we talk about the persuasion aspect, if that doesn't matter what color it is. Is as you start learning these tools and mastering these tools and you start talking to more people in a persuasive situation, is you're always asking yourself, whether it's persuasion or something else, well, okay, what did I do well? And what could I do better? There's always something to work on, something to improve on. That's a big part of journaling. Another big part of journaling, too, is that a lot of things, like when you're trying to find solutions, there's something magical about writing it down. But I'd also keep a section in the back, too, to when you start getting objections that you're coming up with, that you don't have a response for, or you've come up with a great response for, or you heard a great response for, that you kind of have a quick reference guide for you and what you're doing in the back of your journal, and that will eventually become very, very priceless to you. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
You bet. You bet. Good deal. Any other questions? All right. So, again, we're going to focus. We have a little series here. We talked with Steve talked about dissonance last week, but we're going to go focus on trust over the upcoming weeks. We're just going to break it apart because, again, that's the trump card. You want to meet people knocking a door on the phone, getting that trust. You get that, then everything else falls into place. All right, well, with that being said, everyone have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
You bet. Good night, everyone. You bet. We'll see you.